بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله. In the name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh and welcome to the College Muslim. My name is Talha Rafiq and along with my close friend and co-host Badr al-Din Muhammad, we host this podcast, The College Muslim. Our goal is to highlight and show the experience high school and college students go through while growing up Muslim in a primarily non-Muslim society. We are not here to give you Islamic advice or tell you how to live your life as Muslims. Instead, we're here to share our story and through discussion show how we navigated many of the struggles and obstacles we faced in our lives in the hopes that it benefits you all. Both Badr al-Din and I are currently students at USC studying quantitative biology, and between the both of us, we have attended both private and public schools, giving us a wide range of experiences. We also hope to showcase many other experiences by bringing on guests on various episodes.
Lastly, we are not sheikhs, muftis, or scholars, and while we do have a rudimentary Islamic education and are continuously learning about Islam, everything we say here is purely from our experiences and should not be listened to with the pretense that we are Islamic scholars. However, with that said, we do take responsibility for what we say, and if any of y'all have any questions, you can always feel free to reach out to us at any of our social media platforms. So with that said, let's begin today's episode, and inshallah, God willing, we, along with you, will continue to grow as Muslims.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back to another episode of The College Muslim. So this is for season 4, starting our episode 1 with a very, very special guest. So Durkan and I, we go to the same college, and I'm going to let him introduce himself as well as his full name. I call him Durkan, but he has a full name, and we'll go from there. So Durkan, who are you?
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. My full name is Muhammad Berk Durkan. And it's in Turkish, it says with a T. Turkish people write with a T. However, I obviously understand that it's with a D. My nickname is Durukan, my last name, just because there's millions of Muhammads all over the world. There was like 15 in my own grade in high school. That's why the last name Durukan came. I was born in Turkey when I was 2 weeks old. I actually took a flight. I flew out to Saudi Arabia with my mom. I lived in Riyadh initially for, I believe, 4 or 5 years. And then I went over to Jeddah. I stayed over there for 4 or 5 years also. Then I came back for good around 10 years old, like 9, 10 years old. And I started my middle school, I believe I was in. Started around grade 4 or 5. And I completed my high school all the way in Riyadh.
And now you're at your USC doing well.
Yeah, now I'm at USC. I'm about to graduate in a couple of days. I finished my full 4 years here. I did two semesters at SMC, and I transferred over. So I've had a little bit of both. It was like a full university experience and like a kind of a college experience as well.
Mental college you lived in between Turkey, you said Jeddah and Saudi.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeddah's in Saudi.
Jeddah's in Saudi. Yeah. It's on the coast. It's the one closer to Mecca.
What am I thinking? All right, so that's actually what we're here to talk about today. The reason we even brought you on, or the reason you brought yourself on, technically. But regardless of who brought who, what we're here to talk about is essentially like the contrast between growing up in a Muslim-predominant country, probably a place where you heard the adhan out loud on five times a day, versus LA, of all places, Los Angeles, California. There's a funny story. I was like talking to someone. There's somebody in our MSA, I'm not going to bring up their name, but they came to our college. They're from also a Muslim country. Okay. But when they came to USC, they were walking around on the first day, and you know, people dress differently and all this kind of stuff. But the main thing they noticed was there was someone wearing a dog collar, and they were like, I don't know, people do this in America, right? It's a thing. So he saw someone wearing a dog collar. He's like, if I see another person wearing a dog collar, I'm going back. He's like, I'm not staying here.
Probably didn't take him long to see another one.
Yeah. But yeah, so like, there is a huge contrast between Muslim predominant countries and countries here. But more than that, there's a difference of exploring your environment, I think, when you live in a Muslim country versus a non-Muslim country. So I don't know where you want to start because there's a lot, but I think it's like, where do you want to pick up? Because there's a lot to talk about underneath this topic.
The first thing I would like to point out is that when you're living in Saudi, you don't think about being Muslim. Like, it's not really a, wow, I'm Muslim. It's just like everyone else is already Muslim. You're not special in that sense. Mm-hmm. Like you're part of the population. You're part of the average person, I would say. Like in Saudi Arabia, it's like 100% Muslim, I assume. Because like the whole population is Muslim.
Yeah, the whole like living population.
So like you don't feel like an outsider at all. that comes with its advantages and disadvantages at times. So obviously the big advantage is like there's mosques everywhere, five times a day. You're reminded of like a social morality, you know, like you don't see people wearing like booty shorts or something, right, you know? Right. Like you don't see them wearing dog collars, or you don't see guys like with like V cuts or like just showing off their whole body, you know? So I think just in a social aspect, it kind of reminds you of being Muslim, but at the same time, just because everyone's doing it, you kind of feel really common against everyone. I don't know where I'm going with this.
No, that's fair. But, so like you growing up, right? Like did you go to a mixed school? Were there mixed schools?
Okay. So the international ones are mainly mixed.
Okay, so you went to international schools.
I went to, my first one was King Saud International School. That was actually not mixed. That was boy side, girl side. Mm-hmm. But then the one I transferred to in middle school from grade 6 to 12, it was a fully mixed school.
Okay. So did you like personally find it like difficult navigating like social settings with girls or whatever? Because like that's one thing that is very, very, very difficult. And like we were playing volleyball the other day. Apparently, like, I've never played volleyball before, okay? But apparently it's volleyball etiquette to like high five everyone. Exactly. Oh, you were there. I was there, boss. And one of our friends was saying that like it's volleyball etiquette to high five people after you come out or whatever. But the thing is like there were girls there and it's like, I would just pretend to put my hand in my pocket, or like you would pretend to be looking somewhere else, and then you try.
I followed the move. I acted like I was stretching out, so I was coming off the court.
That's so funny. So like, my question is like, when you were like in your schooling system, whether it was in Turkey or whether it was in Saudi, like what was the difficulty of navigation there versus compared to here? Like, what were the actual problems you faced there? And you don't have to dive into like the deep end, but like, what was the difference between navigating a school setting there versus navigating a school setting here?
Yeah. Okay. So until grade 5, I was kind of like secluded from like interacting, not secluded in a bad sense, just like it was good that I didn't like really have too much intimate interactions with them. I wasn't too close. Like I would say hi and whatnot when we were leaving school. I would see girls, like my brother had like girlfriends, like more in like the like classmates and whatever, because he was going to a different school. But like up until grade, but then once I moved to the American International School over there, that's when it was like the free mixing started. And I was actually a little like, not socially awkward, but I wasn't inclined to go and talk to the girls over there.
Sure.
And within my grade, there was only a couple of people who really, really interacted with the girls on a daily basis, or like even between classes. In the classes, I'm sitting with a couple of the boys. I don't have the need to go talk to
them. So it wasn't like a social norm.
Compared to here, I think it was definitely against the norm to talk to girls, especially within my grade. However, I did see the younger the grades were, the more of an inclination they had to go and like free mix together, for example. So like my grade, within lunch, for example, like we have like an hour long lunch between classes, I would never sit with the girls. And like specifically within our grade, also most of our grade didn't sit with the girls at all. Like we were just girls were on one side, boys on one side. Not that we were extremely Muslim at that time either. Like, I don't think I was like, wow, the best Muslim. Yeah. It's just we inclined not to do that.
Because your social norms dictated Islamic. It was like Islamically influenced.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's like there's no reason not to do that.
And most of us come from like Middle Eastern backgrounds, Desi backgrounds. So we didn't have that much Westerners per se. Like the most Westerners, I would say, but Easterners, I guess. There were like a lot of Asians and whatnot. Very minimal European Americans. So definitely, yeah. So that's like the Saudi part of it, where just like I said, we're just not inclined to do it, and influenced by the Muslim social aspect of it. But in LA, when I came here first, like even starting off in Santa Monica College, bro, like the girls, firstly, they initiate conversation with you.
Does not happen in Saudi.
Never, ever.
Right.
Because like I said, it's just they don't feel the need to. Like we understand in Saudi that like if you really want to go talk to a girl, there's only one aspect of why you're going to talk to that girl. Like it's not that, you know.
Yeah.
But in America, there's a concept of being friends and like just talking all the time, which I personally don't do that. Like,
right.
That's just not my philosophy. But yeah, like I said, Santa Monica, like girls come up to you and like you're interacting with them in group projects. You're sitting beside them. And there's just more of a probability that you will actually go ahead and talk to them and create conversation and whatnot.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So other than that, like, what other, like, significant differences did you see between Saudi and, like, the lifestyle you have here, even amongst the guys? Like, is there like a different air of what is valued or anything of that regard?
Yeah.
Because I've never been to Saudi, and I've never, yeah, like damn, I want to one day, obviously, because I want to do Hajj, but like, I want to. But even in Pakistan, like when I go there, I see like they value certainly different things. Like even like among the rich or the poor there, this family is always more importantly valued than it is here in America. No, like that's like every single time, without doubt, family is more valued.
Always family comes first. That's very true. Like for example, like in America, like I don't know, I was reading, I don't know if this is like, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a stat like 25% of Americans have cut off ties with at least one of their parents. So like literally a quarter of America has no contact with one or more of their parents. So that in Saudi would never ever happen. I know, like even like for example, Nawaf still lives with his parents back home. Like he has contact with them. His brother, even though his brother's married, he still comes back to his house and like sees his parents on a weekly basis, or like every twice weekly, you know. So you always have that tie of kinship. Furthermore, it's also like with like the royal family or whatnot. I always tell this to my friends, like I wouldn't want to be you guys because like you guys have so many obligations to go and see family. Because whether you like it or not, whether you want to see them or not, you are obligated to go and see them.
Even if you don't like them.
Exactly. Because even if you don't, the whole family like the dynamic switches up. It becomes more like political. Even though it's a little political now, but then it's like political in an animosity type of way, you know? At least now it's like, okay, I'm here because I respect you. So when you don't go, it's like you're disrespecting them in a sense. That's how they feel. So most definitely like, right. Oh yeah, going back to what you said, so the dynamic between like the females and the males.
Right.
I think definitely within America, I think especially since I've come here to the MSU, I've seen a vast contrast in like the different backgrounds we come from, the difference in opinion. Like some of us follow different methods, some of us think of it in a this way, we interpret it in this way. I think that's more of like the kind of thing that I talk English and I can interact with them easier, and I can like just express my opinions better. But I do think in Saudi Arabia, like between the friends, even though we're a little bit more Western than the average Saudi, we're still a little bit more conservative, I would say, in the sense that like when we go out, we don't really go out to restaurants or like go activities or something. Like we usually just go to someone's house, and usually the house is pretty large. And there's like the boys area, the majlis, like the sitting room for the boys. And we just go, I don't know, play cards and just waffle about random things. And, you know, just
is there not as much of a, like obviously the answer is going to be no. But like compared to our MSA, we have like Pakistanis, we have Indians, we have Qataris, we have Saudis.
Very, very like Saudi. You'll get the often like Qatari, Kuwaiti, UAE, right. Jordan, Syria. But like, within the closer friend groups, like what you're really tied with, it won't go outside of like Saudi. Like I'm the one-off Turkish guy that they've ever met.
Yeah. So what benefit, what benefit is there to that? What have you seen? Like, are there more conversations, like personally, right? Like, because here's some one thing about our MSA and the guys we're friends with, right? Is that we have a lot of conversations. Now, not all of them are productive, okay? Like in any regard, right? But some of the conversations that we have, the reason they're so like vibrant is because everyone has a very, very, very different experience. Right, it's like they have a different cultural background. They've been taught religion in different ways. Yeah. They've been taught different madhabs. Right, like half of the time are like, "Wait, we can't do that. Why can you do that?" Right.
Yeah.
So the thing is, like, in that regard, what are the pros and cons that like you felt like for yourself personally, like on your journey? Because we talked about this too. Like you've had a bit of a journey with Islam as well. Like, is there something specific about this place and the reason why that resonated with you versus where you grew up? Because you grew up in a Muslim country, right?
Yeah,
and you still like somewhat struggled with your faith.
Absolutely.
So what happened here that changed?
So I think, so one of the contrasts I saw when I first came to LA, so back, like you hear that on spot, like when I was in Saudi Arabia, I kind of took my religion for granted. Like I didn't feel the need to pray every day because I was like, oh, everyone else is doing it. Like, okay, sometimes I'll do it, but I was just like, it's fine if I don't do it. I don't know, like that was just like me personally. It's not something good necessarily, but once I left Saudi and I stopped hearing the adhan 5 times a day, when I stopped hearing salams like every single time I go, when I stopped calling like the person I don't know, Muhammad, I was like, okay, now I need to be the person that shows Islam off. Like I need to be that Islamic guy, or else I'm not going to experience it anywhere. And definitely, so that was like kind of the initial. And then once I actually came to the MSU in like the last 2 months, bro, like I haven't even stood for too long.
Yeah.
But like, especially like, for example, like one brother over here where the way he memorized Quran, like he was giving us examples of how he memorized and like how the teachers were so, so like adamant on him and like they would punish him if he didn't do this or that. Mm-hmm. And like, it gets me thinking, I'm like, damn, like, I don't even know anything. And I know like 1% of what he knows and like, look what he went through to get there. So like, it kind of encourages me. It's like, when I hear stories of them, I'm like, I can be that good. And like, it motivates me a lot.
Mm.
And it really does give me like a, because like, for example, I'll memorize a certain ayah because of a certain reason. Then someone else was like, oh, okay, I memorized it for like a completely different reason. I'm like, wow, he went through a whole different experience to memorize the same thing. Like, we still come to the same exact spot.
Did these same conversations happen back in Saudi, like with your friends?
Not really.
Not as much, maybe.
I'm not even gonna lie. A lot of the Muslim people I know in Saudi are not very Muslim themselves.
This is because, like you said, they take it for granted. It's like imbued into the nature of the culture.
It's just like, oh yeah, I'm Muslim. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Like, they don't feel a need to express it. They don't to live it. And like, one thing that's really funny, I just remembered, like, one of my friends would tell me like, oh, you know the hadith that if you read Ayatul Kursi after each of the five salawat, you go to Jannah. Then I got me thinking recently. I'm like, he always used to tell me that, but the requirement for reading Ayatul Kursi after Fard Salah is to actually pray that Fard Salah.
Yeah.
But if you're not doing that, so like that the hadith doesn't come into play. So it's just like a little irony in the, or not, hypocrisy a little bit within like certain individuals per se, you know? So that's, yeah, I'll just say when you're in a non-Muslim country, you feel the need to be more Islamic.
Yeah.
Just to protect that deen, you're scared to lose it. Mm-hmm. But compared to Saudi, it's everywhere around you. You think you'll get it back. But we know that like Iman isn't something that's just like, it's there and it's it. You have to ask for hidayah every single day in every single salah of the day. So definitely in America, just because it's not as evident, you have to be the one that puts it out there.
Mm.
So I think that's what kind of makes me a stronger Muslim in America.
Mm. What was like the tick moment for you? Like, do you have a tick moment? You don't have to go into detail about it, but like, was there something that finally like triggered you to like kind of take it more seriously?
Yeah. Most recently, I would definitely say in Ramadan. So like the first week of Ramadan, I wasn't coming. I maybe came here like between classes to like pray Asr or something. And I would just go back home. But then like I stayed after, once I was like, okay, let me attend one of like the iftars that we had over here.
Mm-hmm.
After that first iftar, literally I knew no one. I didn't know Ayub. I didn't know Irfan. I didn't know Indo. I might've seen them, but I never personally knew them.
Right.
Then literally after sitting once and I saw the brotherhood that was here, like we joke around with each other and like it was such a good experience. I was like, yo, I want to come here every single day. And like the conversations weren't like superficial per se. And like in America, a lot of the, like, especially the college conversations, like, oh, like what movie do you like? Like, oh, what sport do you play?
Yeah.
Like, have you watched this episode? Like it's so superficial. Like they're talking about other people's lives when you should be talking about your life, your experiences, what you want to do.
Mm.
And that's really what I saw over here. Like everyone, like especially you, bro. Like you came up like, yo, I'm like, I have this. I heard like you have this podcast. You're doing all this like Shifa Society, whatever. I'm like that's so cool. Like you're actually dedicating your own time to yourself and not to something like that's not in your control per se.
Yeah.
So yeah, that just seemed so cool. I was like, I finally found. I'm not saying that other people don't do this outside of the MSU, but it's that you do this and you're Muslim. So
yeah,
like the identity, it's like a perfect bridge, you know?
Yeah. The resonance of it always comes back to like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And that's like, even if you're not like totally on top of that, like obviously everyone's at different levels.
Yeah.
The thing is, you can even tell like in the guys who just hang out here consistently, even if they're like, you know, struggling with their faith or whatever, like the reason they show up here every single time is because they'd rather do it with Muslims rather than with non-Muslims.
Absolutely.
And the reason why is because there's like this baseline understanding that me and you are the same.
Exactly.
Right? Like it's like there is something that like equally grounds us. Like even when we watch the basketball game and like, you know, like all that kind of stuff, for some reason when you're watching it with the Muslims, you still understand like, you know, you're gonna yell out Allah Akbar, or you're gonna be like, you know, stuff for Allah, like all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And like people won't understand you, right? It's like because that's a core pivotal part of like who you are. And like something else I was gonna say about what you were talking about was like there's like, I'm not sure if you heard the story, it's like all over TikTok. Like it's like a story that people like will post. Like just like a Muslim TikTok story, right?
Okay.
It's like there's a son, he went to the masjid and he saw a bunch of people doing a bunch of stuff. And he came back to home to his dad and he was like, yo, like, they're so distracting, like this, that, blah, 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 blah. So dad was like, okay, I want you to like fill your hand with sand and go to the masjid and then come back and let me know what you see. So the son filled his hand with like a, you know, sand from like the beach, right? Yeah. Goes to the masjid, comes back. The dad asks him, okay, what did you notice this time? And he was like, I didn't notice anything. And the dad was like, okay, why? He's like, because I was too concentrated on the sand not falling out of my hands, right? And so the idea is that the sand is basically your deen and you and your connection to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And the rest of the world is like this distraction, right? And so this comes back down to like the whole thing with like Saudi, right? Is the fact that you go to Saudi and there, you know, again, there's pros and cons to everything. Like I bet 100% that a lot of people would struggle a lot more here if they didn't have more Muslims surrounding them, right? But by coming here, it sounds like, you know, you had to concentrate on that sand a bit more because there was so much more noise outside. Absolutely, and there were so many more things outside, like distractions per se, and people doing things incorrectly, that you were like, I have to concentrate on my sand more and more, because if I don't, it's all going to spill out way faster, right? So that was just like an analogy.
That was a really good analogy, honestly. Yeah. That is like, yeah, literally, you hit it on the spot. Like when I came here, the more I focus on my deen, the less distractions I see, like the less I'm focused on like what's I don't know, frat party that's happening, or like, what are like the, am I going to get invited to this place or that place? I'm like, I'll just focus on me being me, trying to improve my deen, and everything else just falls into place.
Did you find like an increase of energy?
And was like...
Like as you became more ingrained into the MSU and like Muslim environment?
Yeah,
like,
I definitely think so. I think initially when I came, I was kind of like, oh, you know, okay, it is what it is. It's with the boys, but... Every single time I came back, I was like, okay, I'm now more hyped to see these guys. I want to do more stuff with them. I want to plan something. Like, well, we went to the Santa Monica Beach, whatever. Mm-hmm. We went to Malibu a couple of days ago. Like, it's just the more I chill with the MSU boys, the more things I want to do with them, the more activities we want to do. Mm-hmm. So, and it's sad that I'm like literally coming in towards the end and like I'm leaving in like a week or so. But it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Just do a master's program.
Right, bro? I'm trying to get the Saudi nationality, bro, so I come back for a master's, bro.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So what was like what key difference? I mean, it's hard to distill, right? But like, what are the key differences? Like, because you talked about the community here, talked a little bit about the community back home. But like, what are the key differences in what the community values? Like, did you notice like a... Like why were the communities different? Like what made you excited? Because like I have the same feeling, right? Like I wake up in the morning, I already know I'm going to the prayer room. I already know I'm going to meet people at the masala. Like I'm looking forward to it. And people aren't there. I'm like, oh, where is everyone? Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I have that energy for that community, but I didn't always used to have that, right? That's not how I was in high school. So the thing is like, what is it about this place? Like having a Muslim friend group, or you know, having, because what I'm trying to get to essentially is the value of having a Muslim friend group in America, in any Western society, where the majority of people are not Muslim. Like, why does that have so much more value, and why is that community aspect so important to you here, versus why wasn't that not as emphasized, apart from the fact that they take it for granted?
Yeah,
right.
So I think when I'm with the MSU boys versus compared to when I'm just like with non-Muslims. Even when I'm with non-Muslims, a lot of the times like things will come up like, oh, we're gonna go and like drink, or for example, I'm like, or we're gonna go to the go to like a frat party. I'm like, I feel like such an outsider, like I'm not one of them. Like I feel like I'm being pushed out of the group, or I don't feel a part of the whole. I feel like I'm just completely excluded. But over here, We all, like you said, we're one and the same. Like, we believe in the same morals. We believe in the same, like, faith. We do the same actions every day. You feel a sense of unity. And one thing that, like, specifically that really made my iman stronger and, like, what I really like getting out of, like, the MSU boys is the quoting of a hadith and how we teach each other. So, like, in Saudi, a lot of these things are kind of second nature, you know, their parents told them, or like they just know it from like a sheikh they heard, like, you know, or the TV, for example.
Yeah.
But because here it's not common knowledge, when we say to each other, I take it in more. Because like when you take it in from someone who's older, it's like an authority figure telling you something. But when it's you or like me or you telling each other, like, okay, like he's doing it, I can do it too. Like we're the same person. So it's kind of more I apply it more in a sense.
Right.
Like, for example, Irfan once told me, he's like, yo, you know, if you read this dua after you make wudu. So he mentioned that dua and I was like, I never knew that. And like now, every single time I say it, even though I just didn't say it, but like, you know, it's just those small things that it sparks conversations. It really does spark conversation. Like, we'll be talking about, well, last night it was like me, you, Atta, like we were talking about like Jannah and like the possibilities of whatnot. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel I've never had those conversations back in Saudi.
So what conversations happened back in Saudi? If it's not productive, you don't gotta talk about it.
Yeah, it is not productive. And it's some of the time it's just non-Islamic.
Yeah, sure.
So it's not really the best conversation.
Yeah, and I bet having. it's not 100% of Saudi. Like, that's not like, that's another thing.
It's not a representative pool of
the generalization of it, yeah. But it's like when you find people who have to struggle to hold on to their faith, the faith is becoming, like, it becomes a more core part. That's what I realized here, at least. It's because, like, if you're here, it's very, very hard to keep your faith if you're not going to be surrounded by other Muslims.
Yeah.
So when you find them, you hold on to it. And like you said, like, you talk about Islam more often, because the thing is, it's your only place to talk about Islam. Like, you go out, you know, you're not going to hear the adhan 5 times a day, right? Like, the second you step out of this room, the world is not Muslim anymore.
It's completely,
right? It's like literally like this room, this, like, these 2-3 rooms are the only Muslim community that we have, right? So it's like, when you're here, that's what you talk about. And that's why it strengthens the Islamic aspect of that.
So basically, it's like, in Saudi, when we're sitting down, because it's all Muslims, it's all Islamic practices, since you're so encompassed by those conversations already 24/7, your mind kind of wants to wander into the un-Islamic parts.
Because you're already surrounded by it too much.
Exactly.
Right.
So sometimes it's like overwhelming in a sense. And that's why, like, that's a little bit, I'm going to get into, like, that's
no, political. No. Don't get anything political, but talk about...
Not political, but, like, the seminars they give, like, the sermons they give during khutbas and jum'ah,
right,
they're a little, like, they're too harsh.
Mm.
Like, I feel like it's a little bit more, like, Mufti Minksa, like, inviting, like, it's okay if you're not, like, the perfect Muslim. That's personally from my experience, even though I have, like, limited knowledge, like, in understanding the Sheikh's Arabic. But sometimes I do feel like it's a little, they could use a little bit better language. They could be more inviting and just calling people back to the deen. Because I think in Saudi, it's like once someone kind of strays away from the deen, people look ashamed at them. Like they're like, look at him. Like, you know, he's not a good Muslim. Instead of going like, hey, bro, like, let me pick you up. Let me, like, yo, come to the masjid. Let's do things together. Are you struggling with any part of your life?
Yeah.
Especially over here, like, bro. In the MSU, like, if we see a brother, like, he's not really coming to the Musalla Allah, we're like, yo, like, where are you, bro? You didn't come to the Jum'ah. Like, yo, where were you at Jum'ah? I didn't see you there. Come after. Come eat lunch with us. Like, over here, we invite people back because we understand how important it is to be Muslim and, like, to be, inshallah, like, one of the people who go to Jannah. So we want to pull everyone together with us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, in Saudi, like...
I forget what you're saying. You're basically saying, like, in a Muslim, like, dominant country, there's a certain level of expectation, right? Whereas we are like, yeah, if you even pray one time a day, we're like, dude, nice job. We can make it 2. Let's make it 3. Let's go up one by one because we understand the pulls of everything else. So it's like if someone's coming from that end, we're like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, you know, come. And if one of our friends falls out for a little bit, we're like, yo, you've been showing up to Fajr quite a bit. Like, you know, because the finals, I didn't show up a few times, like, to the masjid. And I got calls and they were like, yo, show up. And I'm like, okay, fine. Like, get off my case, bro.
Exactly. But, that's beautiful, bro.
Yeah, but that doesn't probably happen as much because, you know, there's a baseline of, like, what they think you should be.
Yeah.
Right? And even we have that in some regard. Like, obviously, it's not, like, bias does not completely, like, disappear. But I feel like our baseline is, like, a lot more accepting because we understand that people can come from, like, we've seen people, like, who came from, like, the drinking and, like, partying lifestyle. One of the sheikhs we know came from that aspect, wow. Right? You know the sheikh. You probably know his story. Okay.
You
know his story. Like, he came from, he wasn't always Muslim. He converted, all that kind of stuff, right? And now he's one of the top sheikhs in the entire world. Mashallah. So it's like, you know, there's an air of acceptance that I definitely feel alongside with you being here as well.
So, like, going back to that baseline. So even if we have the same baseline, I think the reaction to that baseline when you fall off is completely different. Like, maybe I'm reiterating the point, but really, like, if you're not meeting the expectations, they don't encourage you to meet the expectations. Mm. It's kind of like a negative feedback loop. Like, you don't meet expectations, now we're not even going to support you.
Mm.
So, like, I think that's definitely, like, one area that us as just general Muslims, like, inshallah, when I go back, if I see that, hopefully I go, like, hey, bro, start coming to Fajr with me. Like, yo, you need a ride to the, you need a ride to the, to Jummah or something. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, I just.
That's something you saw here.
Yeah, like, the sense of closeness of brotherhood. Mm-hmm. That's, and it just goes back to it being so rare that you look for it here.
Mm.
In Saudi, you don't really look for it because, like, you take it, everyone's Muslim. It's like, I can choose anyone as a friend.
Okay.
So, over here, your pool of friends, or at least the good friends, is pretty small, like, within the MSU. But once you go to Saudi, everyone's available.
Right.
Yeah, I guess it also opens up, like, there's good people, there's good Muslims and bad Muslims, not necessarily in their faith, but just their character, the way they treat others, the way they deal in business. So that's kind of what's really funny to me. It's like, right, a Muslim shouldn't mistreat another Muslim, but or like he shouldn't do unjustice in business dealings. That happens all the time in Saudi. Like, someone's trying to rip someone off, someone's trying to get the better end of the deal, someone's trying to, I don't know, do a scam on someone else. But at the end of the day, we're all Muslims. So, like,
yeah,
I find it hard to grasp where, like, we're all part of the same team. Like, why are we playing against each other?
Right, right. No, it's funny because, like, I was thinking about what inshallah used to mean to me and what it means to me now.
Mm.
I grew up in a Desi community. Inshallah was always what the Desi auntie said if they were might. And you could tell it's like a Desi auntie inshallah, right? But when I got here, all of a sudden inshallah meant, like,
with the will of God.
With the will of God, I will actually accomplish this, or I will do this for you, or, like, I will see you tomorrow. Right? It wasn't loosely thrown around as much, right? Yeah. And it, like, it begins to, like, dawn a different meaning. Same as, like, how you're saying in the business doings or in all these regards. Like, there's more of a level of elevation within, like, the, like, what things mean to you and value. Because the thing is, value comes through, like, scarcity as well, right? Yeah. Like, that's something, like, that we know, like, economically speaking, is, like, when there's less of something, it becomes more valuable, especially if it has use. So, like, for us, Islam is that. It has use, and it is not as openly available. So when people find it in, like, this concentrated location, it's like, oh, my God, I want more of it, because you want more of that value back, right? So, like, now that's an interesting point. Like, I never attributed, like, I imagine what I would be like if I lived in Pakistan or something, right? Because Pakistan is, like, 98% Muslim.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, majority Muslim.
And then it's like, I probably would not have come back, like, as hard as I did.
Mm.
Like, I might have been, like, I might not have struggled as much as, like, calling myself a Muslim, because, like, I had problems calling myself a Muslim here.
Okay.
But the thing is, like, I feel like that's something that you might not struggle with in a dominant Muslim community. You're definitely, like, yeah, I'm Muslim, you know, like.
It's like a, like, average Joe, like, you know.
Yeah, like, that's expected. And then you're like, yeah, and you might be in a different scale and levels, you know, with your prayer and your deen, but you would still admit that you're Muslim. But here we have identity crises based on, like, because everyone you're trying to yourself is not Muslim. So it's like, you don't really understand what you are.
Mm.
So, like, but the thing is, when you finally realize that, like, I came back twice as hard because I was like, I need to, this is something that needs to be a priority and I need to, like, protect it. And that's, like, what you were saying too. Most people really want to protect it here because the rest of the world is against you, technically.
Yeah.
Versus in Saudi, where the rest of the world's like, they're on the same.
Yeah. It's plane. Just like a, I get what you're saying. I guess what I also wanted to say is kind of,
No, it's okay.
Wait. Oh, okay. So, like, the point you said about, like, coming back twice as hard after having a quote unquote negative experience or not as strong as of an experience.
Mm.
I definitely think, like, not to expose my own sins, but, like, I was doing a lot of non-halal things, so a lot of haram things previously.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first came to LA, like, when I was at SMC, I actually had a 180 flip of my life. I even got the name Duru Sheikh. That's what, like, my friend called me. Yeah, just because of how intense I went into Islam.
Right.
And genuinely, during those, like, one whole calendar from summer 2019 to summer 2020, I genuinely tried to be the best possible Muslim and live upon the sunnah as best as I could. When I came back to, I quit all of the haram things that I was doing previously, and it just really elevated my, all the other aspects of my deen. So once I cut them out, I was like, okay, now I felt more comfortable praying.
Mm.
And then once I felt more comfortable praying, I started comfortable reading Quran out loud.
Mm.
Then I started Then I started doing things like I started shaving off my mustache. I kept my mustache long, my beard long. Mm. Then I started like doing the exact sunnahs of the Prophet in Salah, like putting my feet up, like the you know yeah, the same position. Yeah. And then,
bro, I didn't know that was a sunnah.
You did?
I used to do it because I felt comfortable.
But you do it with both your feet as well.
Yeah, I do it with both my feet,
bro.
Yeah.
That's
no, because like it, like I heard way back when that like it's like everything should be facing towards the Kaaba except the soles of your feet. Mm. So like the people who take it to that level are like the toes should be facing towards the Kaaba as well. So now it's just comfortable to me, but I can't do the other thing.
But yeah, like it just kept on elevating one thing to another. Like one thing just fed into another thing, and it just exponentially made my like iman and my deen way stronger. And obviously, like I didn't stay at that level this whole time, so I had that experience of what I would say is like the purest form of Islam I was able to follow, like within my capabilities. And after experiencing that, when I fell off of it per se, I was like, I missed that. Mm. Like I missed that part of my life. Mm-hmm. Like even till now, I'm like, I want to be like doing the things I was doing back then. Like I was like praying 5 times a day. I was reading so much Quran a day. I was trying to memorize new parts of the Quran. I was trying to keep the sunnah alive, just like all Islamic content, talk to my friends about Islam. Mm. And when I missed out on that in the last like 2 years, like from like sophomore to like junior year, I always felt like something was missing in me. And those years were probably like my most like depressed years, I would say. Like I just wasn't feeling myself. I wasn't able to bring myself out of like the rut I was in. I just digging a hole deeper for myself every time. So yeah, like I forgot where I began with this, but
you basically started with the fact that when you came to SMC, you came in like twice as hard.
Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah, so after, so yeah, like it was a contrast of like from doing haram to quitting all of it, experiencing the good part of it where I quit. Mm. Now it just motivates to always go like 10 times harder every single time.
Back to that feeling and build on that feeling.
Because like you're all like, using funny terms, but like I'm searching for that high, you know, like high it gives me when I'm like purely doing Islamic things only. It just makes me feel 10 times better.
Yeah, that reflects your what iman is as well, because iman is not constant, right? Like it'll go up and it'll go down. That's what like the mini scale of that is Ramadan.
Yeah,
like I felt it like in this last couple of weeks. I'm like, dude, like I was on something when I was in Ramadan. Like I was like, I missed that feeling already, and I'm like, dude, like if I go like now, like during Ramadan, every single day you pick up the Quran.
Yeah,
like
there's
no question about it. I'm like, I want that life again. Like I don't want to question picking up the Quran. Now it's like I have to consciously make an effort. Like sometimes I get lucky and I'm like, I naturally know that day I'm gonna be reading the Quran, like physically, like the copy, right? Like it's just like I'm always seeking that previous feeling, right? So yeah, no, that's
I mean, funny enough, there's a hadith where it says like the Sahaba used to spend 6 months before Ramadan preparing for it, and then six months after it, yeah, being like grateful for it.
Yeah.
So
it would like, cover the entire year.
Literally.
There's also like, dude, there's so many hadiths and like, sorry about that. I don't know if this is a hadith or not, but it's that you're not supposed to commit a sin after praying Salah or like praying Isha, and like you're not supposed to commit a sin like a certain time period before either. But the idea is that because you're praying 5 times a day, essentially you're not committing a sin any part of the day. Because if you kept the integrity of that salah afterwards and beforehand in preparation for it, you would essentially cover the 24 hours, right? So it's like, that's one thing people don't understand. The better you do Islam, like generally, the better your dunya gets.
Literally.
Like it's like, it's not just for the akhirah.
It's a
like,
positive feedback
loop. It's a positive feedback loop.
God does like, bro, if you show me effort, if you do good, I'm going to reward you here and in the akhirah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
and if you're not feeling like you're being rewarded here, but you think you're doing the right thing, that means it's only going to benefit you in the akhirah.
Literally,
more.
Literally.
So, no,
one thing I wanted to go back to. So you remember you talked about family and like the relationship you keep with your family.
Yeah.
One thing, I just experienced this. So I hadn't seen my mom in like almost 2 years.
Right.
And she just came back yesterday.
Mm.
And one thing that I was so excited about, like I was like, mama, like, yo, I memorized these verses, mama. Like, I want to read them out to you. Mm. I want to tell you about the hadith I learned. I want to tell you about the boys I was leading to, I saw at the MSU. And like, it just shows that, like when you have a whole family of Muslims and you're trying to, you all have one common goal, it does bring you even closer than, not to like demean like the Western like
family sure.
It's just like, it really does make you feel that much closer.
Yeah. It's like when you get closer to Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, you get closer to the people who
are who also want to
get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You see that whole like graphic of like the marriage thing where like Allah's at the top and as like the husband and wife get closer to Allah, they get closer together as well. Like that's the same concept. It's like, no, I totally get that. Like
it was so cool. Like
and it feels good.
Really?
It feels amazing. Like I know exactly what you're talking about. Like I went back home one day. This is like back like a year and a half, 2 years ago. I've never memorized a surah more than like at that point, like maybe like 20 ayahs. Like I've never memorized like a string of more than 20 ayahs once, right? And at this point, alhamdulillah, like way past that. But the thing is, like, that first night I came back, I read Surat al-Naba out of nowhere, like just 40 ayahs off the top of my head. And I turned around and my mom was crying. And I was like, I'm like, I want that more. Like, it brings me closer to my parents. It brings me closer to my brother and brings me closer to my dad. Why would I not? Right. And I feel like that's something lost in Pakistan. Hmm. Like, you get closer to your deen and.
Really?
Like,
funny enough, that was something that was similarly to what, when I was in my Durusheikh year. A lot of the people around me, a little bit, like my mom was kind of like scared that I would go too like far, like too far into one sect of Islam.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people around me actually, I kind of exposed the people around me because I started noticing there are people like you're too deep into Islam. You shouldn't be following the Sunnah that much.
Yeah.
I was like, guys, like this is not like you're supposed to be encouraging me to do more. You're supposed to be like, mashallah, you've been doing this. When I received that reaction, I was like, I took a step back. I'm like, it reminded me of the hadith where like there's gonna come a time when your deen's gonna be like a hot piece of charcoal and you're not gonna be able to hold it. So the more it kind of like I work in a way where like if somebody tells me you can't do it or like it's bad for you, the more I want to do it. If it's good for me, obviously, but. When I heard those comments, I was like, I was saddened. I was like, and this is coming from like, not even like the word, it was from Saudi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where Islam originates in.
Yeah.
So it was just like, I feel like when I was doing it here, in the couple of MSU boys I knew at SMC, they were encouraging me on it. Like, yo, that's so cool. Yo, like, I can't believe you're actually, like, you have a beard. Like, they didn't have beards at the time. So, like, you have the beard, you're doing the sunnah. But yeah, it was just such, like, that's such a wide contrast.
Yeah, based on how reception. Of like your practicing faith.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. One day I want to diagnose that. I want to see like, what is the purpose? Is it because like jealousy or importance or this or that? Like whatever it is, I don't know what it is, but I definitely understand that. A part of me feels like it's also the culture because like American Western culture emphasizes growth and we adopted that.
Yeah.
So the thing is like, if you adopt that and then apply it in an Islamic context, of course you're going to like focus on the growth in that aspect too versus like, you know, Pakistan, for example, is very, like a lot of my family is very, very negative. So it's like, if you have a negative mindset, you'll apply it and applying obviously. That to like Islam in some regard. So it might be like cultural aspects too. I don't know. But I agree with you. Like, I think 99% of the reason I also have gotten more religious hair is because of people
around
keep
you.
Pushing me. Yeah. The thing is, they don't let you fall one step down. Like when you fall one step down, they're like, okay.
It's inviting. They're like, yo, come back up, bro.
Come back up. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, thank you for sharing. but I just want to like, you know, conclude it on a couple notes was the first thing is that like, again, I'm pretty connected to Pakistan, right? And you're pretty connected, obviously, to Saudi, right? And do you go back to Turkey now and then or not?
Every year.
Every year?
Once a year.
Okay. So like you understand the scenario or like the setting. So the thing is like, would you essentially agree, and I know you agree because we talked about this, but would you essentially agree that regardless of where you are, it really comes back down to an active pursuit of like religion? And I think that's what I'm trying to like, this podcast was supposed to like be about is regardless, like people, like, I've heard this so many times. People are like, you know, I'm just going to pack up and go to Saudi. Have you heard that? Like they're like,
I have
forget
heard that
this place, like forget America, forget Los Angeles. Like I'm just gonna pack up and move to Saudi. But I'm like, bro, you moving to Saudi is not gonna fix anything.
Absolutely
like,
not.
Yeah, it might make some things easier, like definitely. You know, prayer and finding a masjid and like praying five times a day. But it's never gonna change the condition of your heart, right? Like, the condition of yourself, like that. Yeah, settings obviously help. Do not get me wrong, but the thing is, it's not impossible to do that here either. Is what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like exactly what you said. So you have to put in some form of effort to try to get better. It will never ever just come to you. And that's really like my personal experience is that when I came here, I had to put in the effort. Excuse me. It wasn't just a thing that just, oh, it came to me or something, like, oh, like somebody gave it to me. Like, I had to pursue it every single day of my life.
Right.
Or else it would never come. Like, the same way I had to pursue to come into the MSU to actually be a part of the brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's evil that exists all around the world. Mm-hmm. Maybe it might be more evident in the West,
mm-hmm.
but those evils still exist in Saudi or any country in the world,
yeah,
regardless. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to escape to Saudi, it's just...
Yeah.
Become better.
It's yeah, or the perception that I'm going to be a better Muslim if I'm surrounded by
other Muslims?
A Muslim country. Or like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, other Muslims will always help.
Yeah, definitely.
And the more Muslims there are, yes, the easier you get in some regard. But there's no reason to think you can't be
the same, good of a Muslim.
As good of a Muslim or as learned of a Muslim, right? If you're going to live in a place like...
I mean, the sheikh's a brilliant example of that, bro.
Yeah, our sheikh's a brilliant example of that.
Mashallah.
And the Quran also, like, this world was meant for us to like, explore and wander and look at, right? Yeah. So it's like, regardless of where in the world you are, you should still be able to retain your iman and your ihsan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any concluding remarks?
Concluding remarks? You guys could hit me up if you ever want to come to Umrah. I've told Umrah? This to everyone at MSU. Me and Nawaf, bro, we're going to be in Riyadh and Jeddah. If anyone ever comes, maybe if any of the viewers, bro, I would love to, like, if they want to, like...
Oh, that's one thing, though. Saudis are way more hospitable than Americans. Like, y'all are so hospitable.
It's because even this, because this, I take this from the deen, actually, where if somebody wants to come to and stay in your house, you're obligated to provide them, like, everything for 3 days minimum. After the 3 days, you can either ask them to leave or charge them for it.
All right.
But 3 days is a bare minimum.
If I come, will you charge me for it?
No.
Okay, good.
Well, you're staying for free. Everything.
I'm going to stay for like a week and a half.
I would love to accommodate you, anyone, bro. I'm like, any reason for me to go to Umrah is a good reason.
Sounds good. I will let everyone know. You're going to get 1,000 requests after this. All right. Amazing. Jazakallah khair for coming on. Thank you for talking about your experience growing up in Saudi and then here in America. And if anyone relates to that or has any questions, feel free to DM us and we can get you in touch with Durakan and then go from there.
Inshallah.
All right. Amazing.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.